speak through me and speak to me so that I can speak to these people that you so love. I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. When it came about that I had to speak on creativity, I was kind of disappointed because Eric is the creative one, and he's the one who knows all about creativity, and he's the artist, and he's just a master at all this kind of stuff. And this room is an expression of his artistic ability and his creativity, and I always feel like I just don't have it. I don't have those skills. I don't have those talents, and I don't have those abilities. And I look back on my life, and I see all those times when I was told that. And maybe you didn't have the same kinds of experiences, but I remember being told by parents that, you know, it was nice to write a poem or a story, or it was nice to paint a picture or draw something, but you couldn't make a living at it. So, you know, that's just a hobby. It's something you can do on the side, but don't put any hope in it. Don't put all your eggs in that basket, because if you do, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to go broke. You're going to live out on the streets. You're going to be a bum artist, and you just never make it. You know, and so I just kind of had that mentality, and I remember taking music lessons and having the guy who was trying to teach me to play guitar after a long time say, you know, you just don't have it. You're a nice guy and you play a good game of pool, because he had a pool table. We played pool afterwards. But you're just not a musician. You don't have any sense of rhythm. You just don't have it. And I remember when I first came to Tucson to start a church, they made a rule on the little band that was going to help me. The rule was, Rod, you may never start clapping with the songs, okay? Just because your sense of rhythm is just horrible. And so I could never start the clapping, even though sometimes I really wanted to. And I just didn't dare, because I knew I didn't have it. Being in grade school, in high school, I remember the art teacher looking at my painting and say, well, that's really interesting, which I discovered was not a euphemism for good. You know, it wasn't something that she appreciated. It just was interesting. It was strange. And she talked a lot about my unusual use of color or things like that, which, again, were not euphemisms for I really like that. It was a euphemism for that's really bad, and unusual besides. And so eventually you learn to not do those things, because you get told often enough that what you've offered is not acceptable. It's not beautiful. It's not right. It's not what is pleasing. And when you discover that, and when you learn that, you clam up and you get small and you hide. But see, I love poetry, and I always did love poetry, and I loved writing. So I wrote poetry in secret for a long time. Literally, I would write poems and hide them. I would hide them so that no one would see them, because I didn't want to face the humiliation of being told that I was bad at that too. And so no one knew that I wrote poetry. And then one day a friend of mine discovered one of my poems. I accidentally left a layout. I don't know if it was an accident or if it was a desperate cry for help. You know, you can worry about the psychology of that later. But in that moment, I realized, when he discovered it, an incredible amount of shame and an incredible amount of, well, I'm just, that's just scary. And so he looked at it and he said, my name, fortunately, was not on it. And he said, hey, this is really good. Who wrote this? And that's when my honesty overcame my shame. And And for that, and I said, well, I wrote it. And he said, man, you should get this published. And I said, no, it's just something I do. It's a little goofball hobby that I keep secret and I don't like anybody to know. And instead he brought it to the lady who was editing the church newsletter of the church that I went to, and she put it in the church newsletter, and I was exposed. And instead of feeling good and wonderful, it actually felt shaming and strange. And when people came up, I had this longing to be able to do that and to have it appreciated, and at the same time, a passion to never let it be seen again and to run from it and to hide from it. Having told you all that, I tell you that for a reason, and the reason is because a lot of times, a lot of us have wanted to offer ourselves in the world of creativity, and we have been told that what we offer is not good enough, it's not right, and we have models here in America, and you know, I want to play guitar like Gary, and if I could just play guitar like him, then all of my problems would be over. I life would be grand, and everything would be wonderful, and I'd be a hero, and Buckshot Blue, you know, would want me to be their guitarist, and they would fire him, and I'd have the position, and it would be so good. It'd be so good if I could play the guitar. But see, I wouldn't take lessons, and when I tried, I didn't do very well, and so I realized, I think, you know, deep down, sometimes Gary would say, boy, if I could just play guitar like Carlos Santana, or if I could just play guitar like so-and-so, we always have that person that does it a little better than we do, and so we become a little ashamed of what we're capable of, or what we're able to do, or what we think we have to offer. And so tonight, I'm going to have a project for us at the end of this message, a project that you're all going to be expected to do. And I want you to begin to realize that God created us as creative beings. One of the values of the village is that we are creative. We are made in God's image, and God is a creative God. And that creativity is intended in community, that we offer it to each other. Isaiah 45:18 says, "For this is what the Lord says, he who created the heavens, he is God, he who fashioned and made the earth, he founded it. He did not create it to be empty, but formed it to be inhabited. He says, I am the Lord, and there is no other." God made everything that we see and know. He put the elements together. Now, scientists have been debating for a long, long time how he did all that. And rest assured, they don't know. And neither do I. So don't think it's just, you know, theologians or Bible people who understand. We have no clue how God created what we see and what we know. He made this earth. He created this earth. And I think sometimes when we look at the first chapter of Genesis and we see that God creates, we see that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. I don't want you to see that as a science book. I don't want you to see Genesis 1 as some great exact explanation of how God did it. We can fall into that trap. I would like for you to understand the beauty of that poetry, what God is really saying, the imagery that's there. And the first thing that he does is create this first day. And it's also interesting that he looks at what he makes and he declares it to be good. How about your art? How about your creative projects? How about your songs? How about the things that you offer? Do you look at them and declare them good? When I was in college, I took a watercolor course, and I took it primarily because it fit between two business classes, and I was busy getting my business degree, and I could just, you know, kind of fill in the schedule. And I loved that class. I loved painting and learning. And I remember the professor coming by and grabbing the brush out of my hand, and he said, "The painting is finished." And I said, "No, look, there's this, and I got this." And he said, "No, the painting is finished." And he took the brush away. It's done. And then I would look at it, and I would see all the flaws. He would look at it and give me a B minus, you know, but or a C plus. But I looked at it, and I saw the flaws. I saw what wasn't finished. I saw what wasn't right about it. And today when I write poetry, I see the things that aren't right with it. It's not done yet. And sometimes when I bring my poem to writer's group, they go, "Enough already. You know, it's done." You know, and they take it out of your hand, and it's no longer yours. Because God calls us into community. He calls us into sharing those things that we have, those things that we make, those things that he's created us to be creative in, those areas where we thrive, where we're okay. And he says that we're to look at it and we're to declare it good as he did that which he created. That word good is an interesting word. It's got a sense of completeness to it. It's got a sense of fullness to it, ripeness. It's got a sense of it being complete. It's like grain that's fully ripe. It's like that it's done now. And that's what God looks at when he sees what he's created, and he says, "This is good." God said, "Let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water." So God made the expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky, and there was evening, and there was morning the second day. And God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear." And it was so. God called the dry land ground land, and the gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. God saw that it was complete. God looked at it and saw that what he had made was good and right, and full and complete. And God said, "Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants, and trees on this land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds." And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seeds according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seeds in it according to their kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and morning, and there was the evening and morning the third day. And then God switches, and after he's created this place for things to be, now he begins to fill it. He says, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs." So he brings in the planets and the stars and creates them to fill up the expanse. And he says, "Let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly across the earth, across the expanse of the sky." And so he creates creatures to fill that on the fifth day. And on the sixth day, he says, "Let the land produce living creatures, all kinds of animals," and he fills that which he creates. He completes it. God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth, subdue it, rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. And then he gives us the food to eat. And he says, God saw all that he had made and it was very good. Very complete. When he made us in his image, it was very complete. It was very done. It was very ripe. It was very full. It was the way it was supposed to be. And then he rested. God creates us and calls us the crown of what he's made because we're made in his image. And if we are image bearers of God, then we are creators or re-creators. And in some ways, we're creators not because we can do what God did. God spoke out of nothing and made something. We take the elements around us, things like words, things like, I don't know, what Russ uses, but, you know, those little electron things, and somehow he forms them into things that make words and creates programs. And we take elements and we make musical instruments, and Gary plays them, and I have no idea how he does that. And he does that with skill and talent and ability. And so we take things and we take what is already there and we recreate it, we reform it, we make it new. But to do that, we have to be creative in our minds, and we have to risk creativity. I used to think that God finished after he created this earth, this world that we know, the beauty that is this universe. It says in Isaiah 65, 17 and 18, behold, I will create new heavens and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create, for I will create Jerusalem to be a delight and its people a joy. God is busy recreating. God is busy making new. There's a tendency in me, and maybe in you, to worship that which is created over the Creator. I worship a really good guitar lick. You know, when it's just done right and the guy has the timing and all that stuff I don't have, when he does it just right and that note just hangs out there, sweet, sweet. It's easy for us to worship that, to fall in love with that. It's easy for us to worship and fall in love with all that we see, the creatures, our own creativity. But creativity is always and ought to be that which brings us to God, directs us to God, so that we see God in each other, the image of God in each other, and that we worship God. Be careful about what you worship. It's easy to fall into the trap of worshiping the created rather than the Creator. Sorry. The other thing is to make idols out of what we've created. To worship those things that we make. That's kind of the opposite of what I had to suffer through. There are people so full of what they've made and what they create, and they want to show everyone. And frankly, it's the opposite of what I experienced as a kid, but it's not the opposite of what I end up doing now. It is very easy for me to say, hey, look at this poem. Look at, doesn't it tell you how great I am? Isn't it amazing how good I am? See how I got it? I got all this meter here, and I got this rhythm, and I found the music, and it's just perfect, and it's just right. Do you see how good this is? And that we begin to hold it up, and that our creation becomes an object of worship rather than God becoming the object of our worship. Habakkuk 2:18-20 says, of what value is an idol, since a man has carved it, or an image that teaches lies? For he who made it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to a lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. We begin to worship objects. We begin to worship creation. I think that's one of the other areas where we often stumble around, that nature becomes an object of our worship rather than a vehicle for our worship as it's directed towards God. To trust in our own creation, to make things and believe that they have a power in and of themselves. Creativity, creation, our creations are those things that we make that direct us towards God. The art that's here on these walls is the expression of the hearts and souls of individuals that struggle with their own image of God, with God's image, with what they know of him. And this becomes expression. And as we listen to the songs and as we listen to the poetry, we struggle with our expression, but it always ought to be expressed towards God. I also was impressed as I studied and looked into this that there is something about the qualities of God that what creativity and creation say about the qualities of God, and we see his visible qualities. We see those in each other. As we walk around and look at each other, we see how God has created each of us and what we each bring to the table. I'm amazed at the uniqueness of individuals. Somebody was talking this morning about so-and-so being a regular person, normal. How strange. Have you ever seen a normal person? I have no clue what a normal person would look like. You know, if we took like everybody's height in the whole world through all time and place, and then we found an average, you know, and then we took everybody's eye color and kind of mixed it and chose... You know, do somehow, if we find the average here, do we find someone who's normal? Do we find someone who No, we're all unique creatures. We're all uniquely created. We're all, in the image of God, unique. So what does that say about God? What does that tell us about God? That God is incredibly unique. Complex, deep. Because as we're made in his image, as we reflect his better qualities that are part of what he's created in us is to reflect that. But according to Romans 1, it says, since what may be known about God is plain because God has made it plain, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. Paul tells us in Romans that what God is showing us is in his creation is his invisible qualities, those things that we can't see. We see the quality, the nature of, as we look at each other, as we look at what he's made, we can see all kinds of aspects of him. But creation's purpose is also to show us his invisible attributes, his attributes of grace and mercy and love and anger and his emotions, those things that we begin to see about God because of what we see in the world around us. As we create, as we make things, as we begin to offer what God calls us to offer, it's kind of a scary thing. Part of creating is revealing your character, your nature, your invisible qualities. Those things about you that are unique and special and wholly other. And that's high risk. Because as you do that, as you begin to do those things, other image bearers of God may laugh, put down, ignore, look away, not appreciate. When we create, we expose ourselves. We become vulnerable and open, naked before each other. Someone asked me about journaling, that I should journal, and I had never journaled, but if you read my poems in order, you learn a lot about me. And the people in the writers group, it's kind of scary sometimes because they begin to know things about me, my qualities that I thought I had hidden well. And they begin to understand things about me, and I them. So we kind of have a handshake agreement that we, you know, don't laugh and we don't put down and we don't mess with these things, because integrity calls us to present our creations, and yet fear keeps us from doing that. When you create, when you cook a meal, write a poem, paint a painting, draw a picture, create a sculpture, you expose yourself. You expose your motives. You expose your heart. People will see your invisible qualities. And we do that in community because God calls us to that. And that builds community, and it makes community richer and more wonderful as we do that for each other. As we offer ourselves to each other, we begin to see more and more what each other is like. And that draws us into a oneness. That draws us away from shame. That draws us away from fear, those things that kill us. And draws us into offering ourselves, draws us into giving of ourselves to each other. I have some envelopes here. And when you open these envelopes, there are some of them that have handwritten things in them. Some of them are typewritten. I'm sorry about that. I thought I had my act together, only to discover I didn't. And so, but this is a little creative thing that I would like for you to do. And here are all the rules. So you have to listen carefully to the rules because there's always rules. By the way, that is another aspect of creativity that I didn't talk about a lot, which is discipline. One of the things about creativity is it feeds right into our other value as a church, which is the value of discipline. It certainly flows into community, but it obviously flows into discipline. Gary didn't wake up one day and be a master guitarist. It didn't just appear to him. From what I hear, he practiced. He practiced. See, I have this deep desire to just wake up with guitar playing ability. I don't want to have guitar lesson ability. I want guitar playing ability. And so I'm never going to be a guitar player as long as I have that attitude. There's a discipline that comes that is required of all of us to force us to refine and make better that which we would offer the community. In Deuteronomy, when they're creating the tabernacle, it's an amazing description, and you can read through those chapters, and they keep hiring skilled workmen, to come and make all sorts of things, you know, make lampstands and make the curtains and overlay an ark with gold and make cherubim and seraphim statues to put on there, and their wings have to touch and they have to be this high. God has like this whole list of directives. Well, you know what? You can't just walk in and slap some gold on some wood and say, yeah, that's beautiful. There was a process. There was the art of it. And the art of it is learning the system, is learning the ways in which to do that. It's taking guitar lessons. It's reading books about poetry. It's taking painting lessons or whatever your particular thing is. As you walk into it, God calls us into the discipline of being creative. But you have to start somewhere. So in these envelopes, there are numerous, I mean, there's just a little slip of paper in each one. And the slip of paper says, this month I will, and then it'll have something that you have to do. I'll write a poem. This month I will draw a picture. This month I will write lyrics to a song. This month I will cook something or bake something that I've never cooked or baked before. This month I will take natural objects and I will form them into something pleasing. This month I'm going to do something. I'm going to do something. And you have no idea until you get this envelope and open it up what it is you're going to be asked to do. And here are the rules. And here are the rules. You most assuredly may not trade. No trading. No trading is allowed. So rule number one, you may not trade. You may not trade. You have to open your envelope, whatever it says in there, you have to do this month. If it's write a poem. Now, okay, so what's the problem with that? Why do we want to trade? Because I'm what? Not good at that. Right, I'm not good at that. That's our rule. That's our little mantra. That's the Rod syndrome of when he was a kid. I'm not going to be good enough at this, so therefore I'm not going to offer it. I'm not going to attempt it. I'm not going to try it because I won't be good enough. Okay, here's rule number two. You won't be good enough. It's not going to be beautiful. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to rhyme correctly. It's not going to be the best tasting food. It's not. It may not be everything that you imagined it should be. Oh, well. That's not the point. The point is not that it has to be good. Matter of fact, that's the anti-point. Okay? Don't worry about how good it is. Most of us don't attempt new things because we're terrified. We're terrified that it won't be good enough. So let's just take that off the table. Being creative is not about being good at what you are creating. Being creative is not about being good.
We have to put our names on it.
Here's rule number three. You may, without shame, you may bring it on October 31 to our Sunday evening service. You may bring it October 31, and we're not, I think we're just kind of having a hangout night that night. And you may offer whatever it is you created. You have, you know, 31 minus 3, whatever that number is, 28 days in which to, 4 weeks, to offer something. Something that you've maybe never done before. Now, here's the cheap thing. See, Karen is going to get write a poem. And she's like a great poet. Or Gary's going to get song lyrics, write song lyrics. Well, like he has never done that before, you know? And so all of our little shame things are going to kick in, right? We're going to say, oh, yeah, see? I mean, he got song lyrics, and he's already a songwriter, and she got poetry, and she's a great poet. And you know, Emily got, she has to, you know, paint a painting like she's never done that before. And it's just going to be disgusting, okay? So if you are already a musician and you get the song lyric one, or you're a painter and you get the painting one, if that happens to you, here's the rule. You have to do something in that genre that you've never done before. So if you've never written a structured poem and you get the poetry one, then you have to write a villanelle or a sestina or all those other things that you're looking at me like, how does he even know what those are? Okay? So if you get one that's easy for you, make it hard for yourself. Because you know what? Everybody else is making it hard for themselves. Now, if you get the cooking one and you want to bring it on the 31st and it's really good, we'll enjoy it no matter what, okay? Now, again, remember, it doesn't have to be good. It doesn't have to be, if you've never made hot dogs before, you can make hot dogs, you know? It's not like this is rocket science. Boiling water may be tough for Joel, okay? So, you know, but try it, yeah. Make an attempt. Okay. Remember, we are all in this together, and we are taking that it has to be good off of the table. Can I say that more times so that you really get it in your head? It does not have to be good. Matter of fact, if it's good, we're going to be kind of annoyed with you. Okay? That's not true. But experiment with it. Try it. Now, there's some that are going to require that you spend a little money, maybe. If you don't have that, come see me. For instance, there's one, I will take artistic photographs. Okay? If you need help getting the film processed or whatever, that's something you can't afford to do, come see me, or you don't have a camera. Okay, here's where community comes in. Begin to call around and find out who has in the community a camera that you could borrow. By the way, I have a digital camera you can borrow. By the way, I have an old K1000 Pentax super camera with all kinds of cool lenses. And I will put film in it, and you may borrow it. Okay? But we know that there are people here who are really good painters. And so if you get the one that says you have to paint a painting, okay, go to Emily, go to Susan, go to somebody who's an artist who has materials and say, can I borrow some? You don't have to go out and buy some. And matter of fact, ask them for help. You know who the poets are, or maybe you don't. So if you don't, ask around. Talk to the other people in the community and say, "Who I have to cook a meal, who in the world do I, or cook something or bake something, I've never done that before, who do I go see, who do I talk to?" And people will eventually let you know. Remember, you have 4 weeks to do this, so you know time is of the essence. If you have to sculpt or make something with tools, don't you hope you get that one, Jeff? if you get that, then find somebody who knows how to use tools, like Jeff, and or who can sculpt, and ask them. And if you can't find anybody, that's really good, because then no one will be able to critique what you made, because there won't be anybody in the community who knows how to do that. Again, this is not about good. It's not about how good it's done. So let's have it. And you may pass them out. Right. Let's take some for those community members who aren't here. Make sure I'm going to leave whatever ones we have left. I'll leave them here. You may not trade, okay? You may open them now. Not good. Not good. Yes, this month you will write. You know what? Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, you are on your honor, okay? And I know that's a dangerous thing to say here, but you're on your honor, okay? Do whatever it said on the little piece of paper. So, is anybody really mad? Good. Okay, part of your conversation at the end of this service, part of your conversation is to share with each other what God's calling you to experiment in, play in, create in. Share that with each other. Let's close in prayer. Father in heaven, thank you for the fact that you are a creative God. Thank you that you created us in your image, that you've made us to be creative. Father, we've been told in so many ways by so many people that what we offer isn't good enough, isn't right, isn't beautiful, isn't perfect, isn't the way it's supposed to be. But Father, you call us to offer ourselves to each other, to offer gifts. So, Father, I pray that each person here would take what they've been asked to do and be willing to walk into the fear of that, the shame of that, and offer themselves to each other. I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Time is to worship. If you have an offering, a gift that you'd like to offer, we would have you do that. There's no communion tonight because there's no bread. Oh, there's the bread. If you know Jesus, you may come and take the bread and dip it into the juice. And as you do that, remember what he's done for us. Reflect on the beauty of this room. Reflect on the beauty of the art that's here. If you would be prayed for, let someone know.